cool fun fact that some of you may know, but some of you don't know, is I am also a b-boy, meaning I break dance. You know, I also break dance. So what that means is I've been doing it for over 20 years, since I was 15. And with that, when you're part of a community, when you're part of anything like that, you kind of start to learn that lifestyle. And a lot of it, that lifestyle, when it comes to breaking, is similar to like skating, you know?
So you
and
got then, that counterculture or its own unique culture.
Right.
That derives from it.
So I think that also bleeds into kind of similarly to automotive when it comes to motorsports and stuff like that. Like a lot of the homies from FD and that drift and stuff like that, we have a lot of similarities.
You know? You had BMXers that became Formula D drivers, skateboarders, snowboarders, you know, so it's a multidiscipline occupation. You know, you're able to go from doing a competitive sport and move into a motorsport aspect and progress up that food chain, which is completely different, because I'm sure with you, with b-boying, there's like a whole World Cup, there's whole levels to it, you know.
Exactly.
And that's found on the motorsport level too. So it's iconography is similar, let's say.
And for lack of a better term, I would say like similarities in like extreme things, you know what I mean? Meaning like, you know, you go out there and you try to do something that is out of the ordinary. You know, obviously breaking is, you know, trying to spin on one hand, whereas like, you know, drifting is trying to literally tandem with people, or, you know, these are things that are not easy to do. Which, cut for a second, Merry Christmas, everyone. Yeah, Merry Christmas. Make sure that
you get
yourself.
I thought we were doing that at the end. I didn't know we were doing it in the middle.
I figured I might throw it in there. Might as well throw it in there just because, you know, Christmas time. Why not? But Merry Christmas. Hopefully you get something really cool. Hopefully you get some Koenig wheels. Who knows?
Hence the green and red lighting. Yeah. We got special mood lighting just for Christmas for everybody.
Yeah. But back to it. Okay. So when I met Scott, you know, I think he saw that in me. He saw that I can learn certain things. Obviously, I didn't know everything, but once you do anything long enough, you learn about the culture, you know. And I think that's how you develop skills in anything. You engulf yourself in the culture and the whatever it may be. When I started working here, I started to learn about FD and drifting. I started to learn about road racing and all that, and meeting the people and them inviting me to things and me going to events and Club Blues and all these type of things that are local to here, you know. And then you kind of just start to pick it up. I think you're around my age. What do you think about the car scene back then compared to now?
It's gone completely sideways. So now we're looking at these organized meets, and they're still getting shut down by police and all that. We used to have massive turnouts at like the Baldwin train station, Best Buy, you know, over at Dave and Buster's, and hundreds of cars, tons of people, massive turnout. But
dude,
we would rarely get shut down, besides the one time in Farmingdale, and I'm sure people are going to remember this, but there was a time when somebody's car got flipped over.
Ooh.
Because I think something went on, there was this disturbance, and then eventually it led to a car getting flipped over, and that's when things were at their like, that was the mountaintop peak. It just went all downhill from there.
Yeah, so, man, I feel like, personally, and the thing is, honestly, I haven't been to a lot of these car meets as of lately, you know what I mean? But from what I've seen through social media, it's just not the same.
No,
I feel like back then, because, and that's what I was going to say, like, there was a spot in Farmingdale, I don't know if you remember, it was like in the industrial area. Do you know where I'm talking
Allen
about?
Allen Boulevard.
Is it Allen Boulevard?
Allen Boulevard,
Look.
Yeah.
Yo,
Allen Boulevard.
Damn.
You're talking about where they used to drag race.
Yes.
Allen
they
Boulevard.
Used to drag race there. Look, I will say this much. It was really fun running away from the cops. That was like, I would look forward to that shit sometimes. You know what I mean?
You don't know what you're talking about. Plausible deniability, sir.
But I do remember all of our boys coming in their cars. I'm talking about CRXs. I'm talking about Honda Civics, Evos, Eclipses. This is the time where these cars were like major. You know what I mean? Like Integras. That's all we used to do, is like kind of just get our cars, do a little couple things to it, meet up at Allen Boulevard, or go to the Baldwin spot in Best Buy, and just meet up and talk shit. And then sometimes it would be straight up like Fast and the Furious.
Oh yeah,
they would block off. Like the homies would block off.
So Allen Boulevard got raided one night. We were there, and we were all a bunch of us were on one of the guys whose property his family owned the pool company that was right there.
Right.
And we're all sitting on the property, and the cops come down the block and literally shut down the entire road. So these guys are going to go launch up the road to go do a run.
Right.
And they ran out of road because there was cop cars straight ahead of them on Allen Boulevard.
Yeah.
So it was literally like a scene out of Fast and the Furious. You see a bunch of people trying to take off, everyone getting stuck in traffic.
Toretto, stop right there.
Stop right there. You know, surprised it wasn't a helicopter.
For me, it was Toledo, stop right there.
Close enough, right?
Yeah, man. But that time, honestly, I think that the one thing I will say different from we were afraid of the cops. Like I feel like now these little motherfuckers, you know,
they're insane. I mean, we used to have like drift meets. We did the Flushing Meadow drift meet. I don't know if you've ever made it out to there.
Yeah, of course. They still do it.
Do they really?
Yeah, they're still out there, bro. Yeah.
Back when they used to do it, you know, we'd be out there for hours.
Yeah, just kicking it.
Cops would not bother you. They didn't care.
Yeah.
There was no, like, it was better that we were there than if we were out on the street doing something stupid.
Well, and I think that was the Flushing Meadow one was really cool because it's in the park.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like there's literally, it was literally on the parking lot. Like
of the area. Park. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of the docks, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You had the whole lake next to you.
Maybe sometimes they'd be like, all right, guys, shut it down. It's a little late. Like,
you guys are making too much noise. Yeah, it's 4 a.m. It's time to call it a night. Yeah, but it was like one cop car rolling in. It didn't even take a lot. It was one cop car rolling in, be like, all right, guys, go home. And people would just pack it up and go. And we never had these issues like they're having now. And it's chaos to think that it's devolved into what it has. And
bro,
that's insane.
The last story I'm going to tell you, and it was super random. So same thing happened. We all peeled out. And honestly, it felt like more intense than it was supposed to be. My friend had his Integra. His Integra was not manual, so who gives a shit? But he would drive it like it was some...
Just shifting his
automatic. Yeah. He's like, I got sport mode, bro. No, you don't, dog. But anyways, so he would... I remember we were peeling out. He was driving. And then he must have been going so fast because we were getting chased, but I think they were like far away. So he tried to stop the car and we went on somebody's lawn and took out like one of their like ornaments or something. And we all hopped out and ran out of the car and went different directions. And then, you know,
this
like back in the
days,
you just meet up somewhere and have a drink and
it sounds like
reminisce
a New York
on the story. So,
actually I have, since we're doing the reminiscing ones, I have a great drift story about, so we used to go to a spot called ITT. It was New Horizons Shopping Center. It's a New Horizons Business Park over in Babylon Farmingdale area.
Oh my God! Yes,
so
I think
back
I remember
in there,
this spot too.
So there, we used to go drifting back in there, and there was a parking lot that we used to take over. And one night they were having a open house at Tarmac, and we had like a guy there that was grilling. It was like a whole big turnout.
Hell yeah.
We ended up leaving there, going to the parking lot. And mind you, I was driving my like cousin's Toyota Camry at this point. I didn't even have my own car. I was just hanging out with people. And we end up there, and the cop shows up, and I'm sitting there as they're loading up, as the cop's reading the riot act to everyone, I'm loading the cones into the back of the Camry to sneak them back to the place. So the cop's in there reading the riot act to the guy, and the freaking guy with the barbecue guy's got his spatula up. Like, I wasn't doing anything. I don't know why we're here. All this, it was amazing. It was one of the, but those were those great nights that we had,
bro,
that are unique. I feel like it's such a New York thing, like coming from outside of New York and then moving to New York. Cause I moved here in what, 2009.
Oh, right.
So I'm a transplant. So like moving to New York was just such a culture shock, and not in a bad way. Like I love New York culture.
Yeah.
Like it's so unique. You know, once you're here and you get used to it and you kind of see, and especially the car culture is its own monster.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that, you know, and this is just to play devil's advocate and try to talk positive on the community now. I feel like also they got their own thing going, you know. I don't think everyone's what is that? That thing that they call it?
The takeover.
Yeah,
kids?
I think not obviously they're not all like this. They're not all takeover kids. I think that there is scenes out there which sometimes I'll drive past them. I don't stop anymore as much as I used to, but because I don't have anything to show off either. I look like a dud with my freaking Fiesta, but I pass by and I see it and I'm like, they're just kicking it, man. Just, you know, doing what we used to do, you know, and
I mean, yeah, man. See, to the thing was, we used to have the OGs. So we used to have the guys that were the older guys in the scene.
Right.
And they would shut down any of the bullshit that right. the bad elements within these groups start doing.
Always.
And I feel like the shutting down of the car culture created this disconnect between generations of car people.
Yeah.
So there was no adult in the room to say, hey, don't go light a car on fire and cut donuts around
1,000%.
You know, and I think that was the problem. There were no adults in the room.
Right.
And I think that has been a major detriment to the car community as a whole.
Right.
So that's my opinion on the takeover, guys. So
the goal is to eventually do Koenig track days. What do you think, guys? Yeah. We got to do one, man.
That'd be great. Yeah.
We would meet up and it would be just normal for us to have cool cars. Now, would I say that I was like constantly under the wrench and doing something? No, that wasn't just, I was just kind of like, my boys had a cool car. Like my boy had an Eclipse. I got the Talon. Then my other boy would get a Civic. Then, you know, it was just very normal for us to have those type of cars at the time, especially because Fast and the Furious came out. Need for Speed was a big deal. You know, all these type of things were huge, you know, so it was very normal for us to have these type of things. So when I came to come work here, I kind of understood it, but I wouldn't say that I would be like, yo, I know how to do an engine swap and things like that. These are not things that I didn't do. Now, for you, I think it was different.
Yeah, I have the, I guess, opposite experience of what you came from. So I actually started out even knowing about Koenig because I had a set of SSMs on one of my cars. And then eventually I worked with the team here for a sponsorship for my 300ZX with the RB in it.
Hell yeah.
I brought to Formula D, had it on the paddock next to Kyle Mohan's booth, and went through the whole sponsorship process from beginning to end. And then when, you know, working my way through a couple things throughout the job stuff, I'm sure we'll talk about all that stuff later, you know, a little bit of backgrounds and whatnot. But when it came to come here, I reached out to Scott and just kind of touched base with him after having a good relationship with him during the sponsorship program, and it worked out, you know, a little bit of back and forth communication with him about what we both were looking for, and here I am.
Mm.
So
hell yeah, man. Yeah, I think so that's what I'm trying to say. Like, for me specifically, like I even mentioned the Need for Speed thing. I remember interviewing with Scott, and I feel like everyone says this to him when they interview with him, which is probably hilarious to him at this point. You know, your first introduction is when you were able to at that time, it was so huge to be able to modify your car. And one of the modifications you could do is put Koenig wheels on your car.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And a lot of the video games.
Right, right.
Like everyone has.
Even to this day now.
Well,
too.
A lot of people had a set of afterburners on there. Yeah. A couple, you know, some candies, you know, the old school wheels that we don't talk about anymore. You know, those wheels. So.
Yeah, man. So, so I understood that part. And then eventually I learned about it just by being around it, man. And I think that. That's why I have such a good time here, because of the simple fact that Scott also understands my lifestyle. You know, the company understands my lifestyle, and they encourage me to do both. You know what I mean? And that's how I'm able to kind of come up with certain things that we, you know, because if you're not engulfed in the culture in some capacity, you're not able to continue to innovate. So I think that going to events is vital for anybody listening. If you're part of an automotive company or you're part of any type of company, make sure that you engulf yourself in the culture. Go out to events, go hang out, go connect, because that'll elevate your company, literally. Yeah. Like, because if you know what's going on, then you are able to continue forward. If you don't know what's going on and you kind of isolate yourself, which a lot of people do, a lot of companies out there that I've worked with, actually. So, as some of you already know, I left for a little bit and came back. I did get to work with a lot of cool automotive brands and stuff. And one of the things that I noticed while I was working with some of them is they're not as in touch anymore.
I feel like they've lost. So I feel like as the companies have gotten bigger, they've lost touch. Like, the good thing is Scott is involved. You guys see him here every week talking to you guys, keeps his finger on the pulse, has people like us that are constantly watching what's going on social media and seeing what's on trend and what people are looking for out of our products and what, and relating with our drivers and having those open lines of communication, where I feel like a lot of the bigger brands, as they've gotten so large, they lose that interpersonality with their customer.
Right.
And I feel like Scott is very good at emphasizing that we stay on top of customer relations and mm-hmm. stay on top of looking at what our customers are looking for
right.
from the product. And right. I feel like that gets lost.
Hell yeah, man. I think one of the best advice that one of my buddies gave me a while ago, who is actually the, this is going to sound crazy, the lead of my breaking crew. He actually started my breaking crew. But one of the things that I feel like has made our, that my dancing crew and even Koenig itself successful is how you lead. Meaning, for example, like Scott is very good to say, you know what? I don't know how to do this, but Nick does. So Nick, you lead this yeah. one. Or I don't know how to do this, Max, you do, you lead this one. And I think that if you're able to have that in any facet, you know, whether it's business, whether it's friendship, whether whatever it is, if you're able to kind of pass the torch, that's how you're able to kind of keep growing. And yeah, I think that's the reason why, you know, in a lot of ways, Koenig continues to exist, because we're constantly being able to say, you know what? You take the torch on this one. It's your time. You shine on that. And yeah.
Well, coming from like a management background, so getting into like the work aspects, like I managed STS for 4 years. I was a front end manager, assistant manager running that. So being younger, like mind you, I was 23 at the time. Sure. I had people that were over me that were all older than me.
Right.
Under me, you know, as far as authority goes. So having to be the young guy and having to manage people that were twice your age in some instances, you have to learn how to work as a team,
right.
you know, to actually communicate, because you can't just boss people around, especially if you're half their age. You can't just come in and be like, you go do this, and then that's it. You know, right. it's more about how to sit down with people and relate to them and find what motivates them and how they work in that environment, things like right. that. And I did the management side over at STS, and then I moved on, worked at Nissan for a while and mm-hmm. did the mechanic thing, you know, here, there, everywhere. And then I kind of settled down in for about 5 years. I spent teaching kids with developmental disabilities mm-hmm. out at a program called Skills Unlimited.
Oh, shit.
And it was amazing. I loved it. It was great opportunity, but COVID completely gutted the program. COVID hit, the program got shut because obviously you couldn't have people working next to each other at the time. So we got out of there, and I started working for my buddy's performance shop, doing, you know, VQs, GTRs, everything on that end of the spectrum, and I loved it. But, you know, that side of the industry has gotten slower, and I took the opportunity to move on to over here. Gives them, you know, a little background on what I was doing, and I can understand where you're coming from the management standpoint, because running a shop or running anything, you run into these instances where you can't take every single thing on as your responsibility.
Right.
You have to be able to trust your team and delegate to them when the time is necessary. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is something that we have in spades here, where we have a good division of responsibility for everybody and we work well together. Mm-hmm. So that's something I noticed when coming here from the shop side, where there's a lot more pressure.
Question, how do you feel? Because like you went from working in a garage underneath with a wrench and all that. How does it feel from transferring to that to like now sitting in an office? Is it difficult for you? Do you find it like, what do you feel?
So I do miss it. For instance, I'm doing a little, you know, helping out a buddy over on the weekend and stuff like that. And I still have like my project car at home. I still have my Z that I'm doing a whole rebuild on. And, you know, so there's always that time for me to still wrench and find time. And now I'm doing it with my kids. So I'm spending time with them, teaching them how to work on cars and stuff like that. So that's cool for me.
Oh, yeah.
There's a trade-off. I like the stability. I like the control. I like mm-hmm. the ability to sit down and communicate with everybody and make a plan versus it just being kind of like organized chaos every day, where in a shop, it's, you don't know what's coming in at any moment. You know, things could be going well, the day could be perfect,
right.
and then everything's off the rails. And it's always Friday at like 3 o'clock and everything goes to crap. And, you know, whether it be a bolt snaps off in a cylinder head or, you know, you name it, it right. happens on Friday at 3 o'clock. Right. So we definitely, we've seen it, and I don't miss that aspect of it.
Right. That's good, man. I'm personally glad to have you. I think that your knowledge base of what when it comes to working underneath the hood, is that the right way to say it?
It's fine. Right. You're under the hood.
Yeah. I think that skill and that hands-on experience is very valuable, especially to what we do here, because I know that a lot of us do that, but not to the perspective of what you've done. You know what I mean? So I think to be able to have someone to be like, yo, I don't know this, and a third about whatever it may be when it comes to a car, and you kind of give us that feedback, for me specifically, it's very helpful, because you've probably most likely recently done it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Or even more so, I did the schooling aspect. I did the Lincoln Tech. I did all that. And then even down at the high school level, I went to a program called CCST in Virginia.
Sick,
so
man.
I did that. That was a hands-on training program for my 11th and 12th grade year.
Hell yeah.
So I did those. And then I went on to Lincoln Tech and did that, which was a repeat. It was just reinforcing what I had already learned at the high school level. And that was so I got that hands-on aspect, which does help, you know, the education side of it and knowing like how systems work. And like we were just recently talking to Zach from Fortune Auto, mm-hmm. and being able to have those, you know, those conversations about what, like how suspension works and things like that. Even at the most advanced level, it's good to be able to have that communication, because we're getting customers in now from every level. We're getting them from the lowest guy who's just trying to throw a set of wheels on his car, all the way up to the guy who's like, hey, I have a race car that I have this, that, and other thing done to it, and now I need a wheel package that's going to accommodate what I'm looking for.
Right.
So we've been able to target a larger scope of audience now, I feel like, because of the technical knowledge that we're bringing in.
Yeah. So I also think like one of the cool things that I'm sure you're probably experiencing is like, you're probably learning things too.
Of course.
You know, because there's a lot of things that you probably, when it comes to like these racers and stuff like that, their knowledge base is pretty big too. So you're interchanging information and experiences or whatever it is. It's kind of helpful. I'm sure when you were on the, you know, with the Fortunato, you're not working on suspensions all the time. So to get that knowledge base and be like, oh yeah, you know what? Good. Thank you for that. You know,
when
what
we started
I'll
getting into
that.
Like the Pro 2 and Pro 3, like I've never seen those on most street cars in New York. Like nobody's running around here with a full set of track coilovers like that. But it was cool to be able to have that conversation and really get into the nitty gritty of what, you know, why they've made those decisions on their products and where they see these things needed.
Yeah. So. It's the same thing for me, man. Like that's a lot of the, like, it's crazy. Cause like I, sometimes, you know, my casual friends be talking about car things and all that. And then I'm kind of like, no, man, like it's this way and the third. And then I'm realizing, I'm like, how did I even know that? Oh, I learned it because of working here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Hearing people talk, you know what I mean? Hearing, you know, how certain things work or whatever. And I think that that's one of those things that's very valuable for me working here. It's like, and again, emphasizing the fact that you always be available to the community, always work with the community, and at the end you learn some cool stuff and you fit into the mold of whatever it is you're trying to be, you know. Yeah. So yeah, man, I think that's my story here. Yeah. Bro, I
feel like we pretty much covered everything.
right But on the bright side of things, let's look at it like this. What are you doing for Christmas, bro?
Probably going to do Christmas Eve at the mother-in-law's with all the kids, presents at the house, normal thing. What about yourself?
I'm going to, so Latinos, we actually do Christmas on New Year's Eve at 12.
Okay, so you do the midnight mass.
Yes.
So we do the Feast of the Seven Fishes and all that over there.
Oh, okay.
So that's their whole spiel. So we go over there and that's the whole dinner. And usually it would end with midnight mass.
Right, right. So we do that. And then the next day, we're going to go see Emily's family, which they do stuff in the morning, day of Christmas. Yeah. So,
awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time, man. So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Merry Christmas to all of you guys, and peace.
Peace out. Merry Christmas, Grayson, Madison, and Jill. I had to.
Merry Christmas, Emily.